Okay, I'd like to call to order the regular meeting of the South San Francisco County Sanitation District Board of Directors, Wednesday, January 3rd. Could we have a roll call, please?
Yes. Director White.
Here.
Director Hill.
Here.
And let the record show that there is a vacancy for Cook County Board of Directors at this point.
Okay, will we please rise? And Mr. Hill will lead us in the flag salute, please.
Ready to salute. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Please be seated.
Go ahead and have the agenda review. I didn't see anything. Did you see anything?
No changes, Karen.
Entertain a motion.
Move to accept the agenda as presented.
Second. It's been moved and seconded to present the agenda. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Passes 2-0, one absent. And we can go ahead and move on to public comment items not appearing on the agenda. Public comment period is an invitation to members of the community to present comments, thoughts, or suggestions on matters not scheduled on the agenda. Comments should be limited to these matters which are within the jurisdiction of the district. The Brown Act restricts the board from taking formal action on matters not published on the agenda. In response to your comments, the chair or presiding board may direct staff to assist with you, direct staff to place an item on the agenda or a future board meeting. Thank you. I don't need to read the rest of it, do I?
No.
Okay. Ms. Tacker?
Good evening. I'm Julie Tacker, and Happy New Year. First, I think I want to address what you just read. Slanderous, profane, or personal remarks against any board member, staff, or member of the audience shall not be permitted. At some point, your board needs to look at that and realize that that is, you can't enforce that. That is against the law. The Brown Act allows the public to say whatever they want about whomever they want, and if it's slanderous, it's up to the individual to take it to the next level if necessary. What I do want to speak to you tonight about is some leftover business from 2017. I know that I have, and I believe members of the public have asked, and we will continue to ask, that your board rescind the censure of Mayor Hill. The censure was brought about by trumped up charges that were never verified and certainly were they should have been applied, and that leads me to my next subject, and that is to investigate Mayor Scholes. This board needs to investigate Mayor Scholes. Mayor Scholes admits that he was outside his authority as a board member, meddling in personnel matters. Another item that your board should consider in 2018 is expanding the board makeup, having a community discussion that would allow for more people to represent the people in the sanitation district. This district is larger than any of the cities, and you have a smaller board. Consider putting that on an agenda in 2018. This weekend, I wrote your board a letter about your legal counsel's participation in the Wallace matter and the Wallace hearings. I hope that you've all read that. It's surely available to the public. I've left some copies here if anyone wants to read it. But I think your board needs to take up the discussion of why and who authorized Wendy Stockton's participation in the hearings at the San Luis Obispo Superior Court as they proceed with the John Wallace matter. That's it for now. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next.
Well, I agree with Julie on rescinding the censure of Jim Hill. I know that those were trumped-up charges, and they weren't proven, and it was a sham, the whole thing was. Then I wanted to ask about why the last meeting was canceled. There wasn't a reason given. It wasn't like we didn't have a lot of business to attend to. We do have alternates if the directors are sick or can't make it for any reason. I was wondering who made the decision that there would be no meeting and why the decision was made. It seems to me that the board as a whole should make the decision that a meeting be canceled. That would need to be at a public meeting like this, unless there was some kind of an emergency. If that's not in the bylaws, perhaps it should be added to the bylaws, that should be a condition. When I met with Mr. Huebner last year, one of the questions I asked him was why a meeting had been canceled, that I felt we had a lot of business to attend to and it had been canceled with no good reason. And he told me that the board chair was going to be out of town, and he told him it was okay to cancel the meeting. Since Mr. Huebner was hired in March of 16, till he was gone in July of 17, 5 meetings were canceled. There was no reason given for any of those meetings being canceled. So I'm just wondering, what's the protocol here? Has it been broken? And if it hasn't been broken, maybe we could change it to where it takes 3 board members voting to cancel a meeting in the future.
Ron Arnoldson, Grover Beach. I kind of want to reverberate the same things that have just been said. I know that Mayor Scholes basically came right out of the meeting and said that he had intervened in some personal matters, and that's the whipping stone, or whipping, whatever you want to call it, that Mayor Hill was brought forth and sanctioned for. So I agree that there should be some action taken against Mayor Scholes. And as Patty just said, I've followed this board and been on this board, and I don't think there's been 5 meetings canceled in the history of the board. And there's 5 meetings canceled when Mayor Scholes is the chairman. It seems like he's God here, you know, and anything he wants to do pretty much happens, and anybody from Oceano just wants to go right down the line with it. So I really agree with some of the statements that have been made. Thank you.
Hello, Colleen Kubel. I would just like to ask the board and legal counsel, the public has brought forth a request to have Mayor Scholes investigated for what he said in a public meeting. If someone like Member Hill, public person, comes up and accuses him of something, immediately something is done. Here, Mayor Scholes is getting away with nothing. Something needs to happen for what he admitted in public. Legal counsel isn't doing anything, and the board hasn't been able to because 2 people vote always against 1. And so something has to be done. It needs to be brought forward, and the public's not going to let this go. Legal counsel needs to do their job too. And that's the most important thing that needs to happen, because the board has to do their jobs. And if it's not able to call somebody on what they do in public, then there's something wrong with the board and it needs to be changed. So we need to have it fixed, and legal counsel needs to get on it now.
Shirley Gibson, House Hen. I don't think a bigger board is necessary, and I would like you to keep in mind of who's requesting that, and that the ratepayers are the ones that elect you and support you. So I'd like you to keep that in mind. And as far as leftover issues from 2017, a couple meetings ago, Julie Tacker, and I'll quote, when there was discussion about the $800,000 that was missing, she said, well, I don't want to say what I'm thinking, but Mr. Huebner is gone and the money is missing. So now that that money is accounted for, I think at this point, a person of substance and integrity would retract that comment and offer an apology, even though Mr. Huebner is long gone. So thank you very much.
Anyone else? Anyone else for public comment? Moving forward. Move on to the consent agenda. And I guess we call for public comment on the consent agenda prior to our discussion or afterward?
Prior.
Prior to? Consent agenda, public comment.
Julie Tacker again, and thank you for the expanded minutes. They are much better, easier to reflect on what happened at the meeting. With regard to the warrant packet, I have to say that I am surprised by the continuing high legal bills. Mr. Trujillo's bill for November and October, I guess, is not because it's 2 months, it's still too much. $11,229.50. The work from Mr. Sweet and Mr. Karp exceeds, well, it's just under $25,000 for the two of them that in this same period. It's too much. The human resources, I thought our work from Ms. Lara was over, and she's got a bill. The temporary services, regional government, we still have temporary laborers or temporary positions. I'm not understanding why, with Amy back, why do we still have temporary workers? Why is there still just money being spent on this? I did have a question about the payroll. Mr. Clemens' settlement is under payroll, and I would say that that's misapplied. The settlement with Mr. Clemens is a legal matter, not a salary dispute or anything related to his salary. Certainly he's not going to be taxed on it as salary. It's a settlement, and I think that needs to be accounted for differently. So, and the most egregious warrant here is for Liebert Cassidy Whitmore. Your board never authorized more than $7,500 for Liebert Cassidy Whitmore. The invoices kept coming, the warrants kept reflecting it, and your board authorized payment incrementally as those bills came. But your board never had the question before them of whether or not to enter into a contract beyond the $7,500 that was agreed upon last March when the city of Arroyo Grande came to you and asked you to partner in that investigation. So I think Liebert Cassidy Whitmore, based on their work, should be sent packing with their little invoice and told, no, we didn't authorize the work, and the work was shoddy.
Thank you.
Chris Victorine, ratepayer. And I also want to comment on John Clemens' settlement being coded as payroll. You know, it's important to record costs accurately. It's important for budgeting, analyzing trends, and tracking expenses. Miscoding can result in problems, that, as can be seen with the miscoding that was done for the brine sampling expenses, which is on item 6C, page 2. The settlement cost should accurately be recorded as a settlement, not as a payroll cost. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else?
I wanted to say that I also have a problem with Liebert Cassidy Whitmore just running their total up without the board being advised of it ahead of time. When we commissioned Carl Knudsen to do his investigation, his forensic audit, there was a certain amount of money agreed that he would be paid up to that amount. When it was apparent to him that he was going to need to go beyond that amount, he came before the board and presented the reasons why and asked for more money. He did not even get it at that meeting. They postponed agreeing to pay that. It took him coming back to the next meeting, or it being presented at the next meeting, and then it was okayed. To me, that was honest. It was above board. Everyone knew what was going on. Liebert Cassidy Whitmore did this to Arroyo Grande also. They ran up their bills. It never came before the council that they were going to exceed the $7,500 budget that Arroyo Grande and South Sand District allotted. I want to know who told them they could go beyond that, why they felt they had the right to just run up the bills to the, what is it, 70,000, 80,000, I don't even know what it is now, between the two communities or two organizations. I really would like to see some clarity in that. Like, who told them that they could go beyond that amount? Why did they think that it was okay for them to go beyond that amount? It was a sham investigation to begin with, and then to run it up into the tens of thousands of dollars is unquestionable. I say, get rid of them, get rid of them.
Thank you.
Colleen Kubel again. I just have one question. Where's the cash report? It's not in there. And I'm sure the public wants to see that, the board wants to see that, and we need to know where the cash report is. Thank you.
See no one else coming forward. Move on. Jim, do you have any questions or comments?
Some comments. I'm concerned about the accounting of the legal settlement payment being accounted as payroll. I would urge that be looked into and corrected if necessary. I have long shared the concerns about high legal bills here. For normal operation, I would expect that the bill that's been presented this evening is unusually high. Again, I have no quarrel with the hourly rate of our legal counsel, but I'm also reminded that this is one of two members of our legal team that have submitted a bill for this period. So my firm expectation is that the legal billings are going to come down in line with other districts that have similar jurisdiction and purpose as this. And unfortunately, for the last considerable period of time, we've not enjoyed that I also firmly agree with the commenter about Lieber Cassidy Whitmore. There were a number of investigations that were conducted by that organization on the apparently request of the former district administrator, and a running total, as near as I can estimate, of $350,000 and change. I believe that those expenses well exceeded his authority to spend that money. So I am not able to support that particular item. I will support the legal billing this time for our district legal counsel, but again, I'm expecting that those charges will come in line with other similar districts in the very near future. I share the concern of the commenter that there is no cash report here. That's been a staple of our quarterly reports. This is the end of a quarter and also the end of a calendar year, not a fiscal year. But those have been features of our board presentations for as long as I can remember, and I have a long memory here. So its absence is very notable to me. The other item on the consent agenda is the minutes. I do agree that the minutes appear to be well done, and I'm prepared to support the minutes this evening. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yeah, thank you. I would question the absence of a quarterly report for financing, but I would think that on the third day of a new year, there might be obstacles in getting that to a board before you could close out the end of last year. So I would ask if maybe that would be forthcoming in the next board meeting, maybe. I mean, wouldn't that be an acceptable time for us to receive such a quarterly report? I realize we had a pretty comprehensive report last meeting. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, what's your pleasure, Mr. Hill?
I would first of all move approval of the minutes of December 6th as presented.
Why don't we go ahead and do these separately, and then I'll second that, and then call for a motion on the minutes.
Move to approve.
Second. And all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Passes 2-0, one absent. Get that taken care of.
With respect to the warrants, I move approval of the warrants with the exception of Lieber Cassidy Whitmore, and that the legal settlement with the former plant superintendent be separated from the regular payroll.
There's a reason for that. Somebody just might respond to that. It's processed that way. We may put it as a line item differently, but it's processed that way because there is withholding that has been requested by the party. So that's why it's processed in payroll, so that it's the withholding is the same as with payroll. But we can look at line items different. There's no line item presently in the budget that would serve that purpose, but we can look at how we may approach that.
I would like to know from how long ago that Lieber Cassidy Whitman bill was for. If it's a holdover from 2 or 3 months ago, or if it's something new.
I think it probably is the last bill we're going to receive from Lieber Cassidy Whitmore for any of these items. And I think it was just a matter of wrapping up some stuff that's been, some items that have been finalized. I don't anticipate any further bills from LCW.
(Clears throat)
Madam Chair, given the explanation on the withholding for the legal settlement, I'm not entirely satisfied with the answer. I believe there's ways to make withholding from various payments other than through the standard payroll method, and hope that we would look into that. But at the same time, I don't want to hold up payment of our staff or our other obligations. So I would move approval of the warrant register as presented, with the exception of Lieber Cassidy Whitmore.
And I would second that motion.
Okay.
Call for a motion. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Zero. It passes 2-0 with 1 absent. Do we have any idea when Ms. Nichols?
Had expected her before now. I don't know what's...
Or was she like my stupidity and didn't know the meeting didn't start till 6:30?
I have no explanation.
Well, I guess we move on ahead.
Item 6B? The item before the 6A, the item before the board is the election of chair and vice chair for the 2018 calendar year. This item would normally been at the annual regular meeting, last annual regular meeting of each calendar year, which would have been the last meeting, which was canceled for lack of quorum. The term of the office is the calendar year that we are now in. And we can go ahead and consider this item.
Do you want to wait and see if she's going to show up, or do you want to go ahead?
I guess we can go ahead. Okay. Quorum.
This sounds very awkward, but I'd like to make a motion that Oceano... Oh, wait a
public
minute.
Public comment?
Oh, public comment. I always forget. I'm sorry, ladies and gentlemen. Public comment, please. Yes.
Good evening again. I'm Julie Tacker, and I actually would support the recommendation. My recommendation is that Mayor Hill is your new chair. And the reasons being, and with all due respect to Oceano, is that Oceano has been flipping and flopping between its representatives for the last several years. And until we see some consistency out of Oceano, I think it's unfair to those being represented to have them have Oceano in the chairman's seat when we don't know who's representing your district at this time. It's just been inconsistent for a very long time. As far as the representation from Grover Beach, the last 2 years, in my estimation, has been the most expensive 2 years of representation in the chair seat since the Wallace years. I think Mr. Scholes got too comfortable, too cozy. He lost some objectivity, and I don't think he's suited to be the chairman any longer. The direction of the district under the leadership of Mayor Hill was fruitful. The rate increase, the redundancy project, when you lost Mr. Sweet, Mr. Clemens was put in and the ship was right. When Mr. Huebner came on board and Mr. Scholes was the chair, things went awry. So I would like to see your district go back to Mayor Hill just for some stability. Clearly with the other agenda items on the list tonight, there is some work to be done, and I think he would be best suited to carry forward.
Shirley Gibson, Halcyon. So the last person that spoke against Oceano being the chair is not a ratepayer, does not live within this OCSD. So let's move on from that. I support Oceano's term. Thank you. And let's not forget that same person cost $11,000 from Cassidy Whitmore et al., and that person's not a ratepayer. So it costs money when people are not speaking within our community. Thank you.
Thank you. Next.
Chris Victorine. And I don't believe to attend a public meeting you have to be a ratepayer or to make comments. I am from Oceano, and I support Jim Hill as the chair. Thank you.
Tricia Price. When Mayor Scholz was the chair, he pretty much controlled the board majority, it would seem. I don't think the Oceano member ever voted against anything he wanted to do or didn't want to do. Because of the board majority voting down Director Hill and supporting Mr. Huebner, the district's bills, their legal bills, have been in the hundreds of thousands of dollars. Money spent on investigations that we still know nothing about for the most part. It has forced a highly qualified plant superintendent, a man that always had the district's best interests at heart, out and silenced him. The 2015-2016 audit is still not done. The district has paid a settlement to an incompetent administrator to get rid of him instead of firing him with cause, which it had good cause. And we have silenced those who know the truth about what's going on. And I'd like to know what is going on. I don't support anyone as chair who made no effort to stop the disaster that has befallen this district. It's in a mess, and it's because this board supported Huebner. Jim Hill's the only director who was paying attention, was calling out the administrator. The public supported what he was saying and were tired of the chair doing exactly what he wants and possibly going beyond his ability to do things. There was not board agreement on many things that he did. It was not even brought to the board, from what I understand. I don't know how there couldn't have been a quorum for the last meeting. We've got six people that could have come, or that were should have been available to come to the last meeting. And why were all those other meetings canceled? I would like to know who was responsible for that, what the reasoning was. I mean, everybody has alternates. Surely there were alternates available. Again, what's been going on here?
Ron Arnoldson, I see the movement to bring forward the Linda as the chairperson as a quid pro quo. It's like you support me, Mr. Mayor. Mayor Scholz says you support me, and next year you'll be chairperson. But it doesn't matter if she's chairperson; he's still going to be the person in charge. He couldn't move too fast without her breaking her neck.
Lynn Kubel. Just a couple of comments. The public that normally comes to these meetings, gets involved, is interested enough to show up. We want Mayor Hill as the chair. Simple, direct. He's the one who investigates everything in detail. He's the one who makes sure that everybody knows what's going on, no matter what people have said and alleged, which didn't happen. He's the one that gets down to what's really going on. And with him as chair, things are going to straighten out. They are going to straighten out. And we, the majority of the people who show up to these meetings, have he has our support for the chair. We wish you would consider that, and it needs to happen. You'd be surprised how quick things would turn around.
Richard Kubel, Roy Grandy. I concur with what those ladies just said. I support Mayor Hill to be chairman of this board, and I'd like to see every one of those five seats filled instead of just three, where two can go against two, two against one. So I hope you take that into consideration. There should be a person in each one of those five chairs up there instead of three. Thank you.
Anyone else?
Close the public comment.
Close public comment. Move on to discussion. Well, as I was going to say, let the fire truck get home first here. I was going to say that I am going to nominate Oceano, not myself, but Linda Austin, who has, for the last few months, faced some major tragedy. I talked to her this afternoon. She would be here tonight if she didn't have the cold that everybody else is having. And she is going to start full-time on our board with next Wednesday night's meeting, and she will be here, and she's very eager to resume her work on the sanitation board, and so I will nominate myself, or her actually, as president of this board.
Madam Chair, if I might, a year ago when it was Oceano's effectively turn in the rotation for chairman, Oceano supported Mayor Scholes to continue as the chair. This new year sees the district at an unfortunate low point. I'm always an optimist, so I hope that we will be able to recover. But a couple years ago, the district operations were running well. We had a competent plant superintendent that was running the plant well. Members of the board from Oceano wanted to get rid of the chief plant operator because he was apparently a colored guy having an inappropriate relationship, to quote Mary Lucy, with a white woman. Unfortunately, the chairman chose to become the handmaiden of that mindset and objective. For the last 2 years, the apparently overriding goal at this district has been to remove the chief plant operator and penalize the other staff member in that relationship, while running up costs. The chair engaged and apparently encouraged Mr. Huebner's tactic of bringing countless unfounded investigations that proved only two things. First, that you can waste around $500,000 apparently on the chair's unilateral approval without obtaining concurrence of the board, and fruitless and obscene legal and related charges. And when I objected to that, the Oceana representative sided with the chair, unfortunately. Second thing is that unscrupulous outside legal contractors, absent any oversight here, are more interested in billing than recommending mediation and other conciliatory approaches that would have been in the better interest of the district, and they pursued countless investigations that we haven't even heard the results of most of that. Throughout all, virtually nothing was accomplished besides major disruption of district business and reduction in service quality. Mr. Huebner eventually had to be bought off without having succeeded in the chair's objective to terminate the plant superintendent. Meanwhile, our most experienced operating and administrative staff members were held out on paid leave with the acquiescence, no, actually with the approval of the chair. All aspects of the district's operation deteriorated. We failed even to keep up with basic business. Our accounting is in disarray. Our audits are 2 years behind. Our well-compensated interim administrators have apparently accomplished not much, except finally the termination of our most highly qualified operator. I find it noteworthy that the inspection of the digester number one, as reported later on in our business this evening, did not reveal damage that had been rumored all along to represent malfeasance by the superintendent. Our former superintendent is apparently prohibited from even attending district meetings. What are the board members and administrators afraid of? Promises to our employees have been broken. We promised them that they would have job descriptions by a date certain, which was long in advance of any reasonable objective, and still that promise couldn't be met. Our employees have sought the protection of a bargaining unit. Important meetings have been denied or canceled. Financial statements are absent. The recurring delay projections for our two-year overdue audit appear to be a kick-the-can scheme to put that project off until the clock runs out and it can be dumped on someone else. And inexplicably to this day, the large legal bills continue. Madam Chair, I think it's time to stop the personal agendas and start acting in the interest of the district ratepayers. I would be willing to serve as chair for the next year.
There is a motion on the floor. Is there a second to that motion?
No, there is not.
So that motion dies for lack of second. Is there a desire to continue this item?
I think you're kind of at an impasse, and I don't think at this point in time that we should actually waste any more time, which is money, in a meeting to talk about it, because I think it's going to have to go to, and that was why I was talking, wondering about when Ms. Nichols is going to come. I think it's going to have to go to a point where there are three board members. Would you support that?
Yes,
moving
can move
it forward.
Your discussion.
Yes. Yeah.
So, would you consider a motion to continue this item?
I'd move to continue the item to a date uncertain.
Second.
To a date uncertain?
To the next board meeting, because we were supposed to, we're already one meeting too late on.
Then to the next board meeting.
Yeah, thank you. I'll second that. It's been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Passes 2-0. Moving on to item 6B, issuance of a request for proposal for environmental services in support of funding opportunities for redundancy project.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The item before the board tonight is a request for issuance of request for proposals for environmental services in support of funding opportunities for the redundancy project. As the redundancy project has moved forward, there have been identified a couple of funding opportunities of which the district would need to put forward some additional environmental information, primarily the environmental information that's sought under this request for proposals is is air quality money, modeling, and cultural resource efforts. The items that we have the possibility of, the district has the possibility of getting grants for financing opportunities under our USDA grant based on Oceano being a disadvantaged community, and one of the attachments, which didn't turn out quite as good as I had thought, from the Department of Water Resources website showed that most of Oceano is considered a disadvantaged community, and at least at the present website, and also funding under State Revolving Fund. I did run some numbers just to see what was the value to the district, and the value on a 2% change, or 2 points change, actually 20 points change in funding, otherwise a 4% to 2% change, for funding over a 30-year time frame on a $20 million project would be about $28 million to the district. So I know there'd be some discussion about what's the value of this and if it could be significant, quite frankly. So that's why we moved ahead with bringing this RFP for your consideration tonight. And I'll be glad to entertain any questions from the board. Also, Michael Nunley, who with MKN Associates worked on preparing the RFP and is available to answer questions if you may have them.
I have no questions. Appreciate your bringing this forward and the calculation that you've done, Rick. Thank you for that. I'll entertain public comment when the chair is ready.
Yes. Public comment on this item.
I'm curious about the, Julie Tacker, by the way, the calculation that you just made. The I didn't understand that the loan was going to be reduced for the whole amount. I thought only Oceano's fractional portion was where the benefit lies. If I read that wrong, I would like to be corrected. What overarching issues to me are, we don't know what the bond market is right now. We will spend money pursuing this when that may be attractive and something that could be gotten sooner without the red tape of the NEPA. The other thing that State Revolving Fund and USDA, I know, as was applied in Los Osos, our community had to be retrofitted for low-fit fixtures so that our flows were low in order to be eligible for that money, and that was for a sewer project. So it occurs to me that Oceano is not retrofitted. Only voluntary retrofits have gone on in this community. The I&I out of Oceano is likely high, and that the benefit of Oceano's disadvantaged community to the district would only be fractional based upon how much their sewage goes through your plant. So if I'm wrong on how that works, I would like to be corrected. But I do think Oceano should be retrofitted so that your flows are minimal. Your sewage pipes should be tight so that your infiltration of groundwater is stopped so that your plant doesn't have to process more water. If it goes the way I'm thinking, that you do have to have a tight system out of Oceano, the millions of dollars that it would cost Oceano to come into compliance would probably be offset at any benefit for the loan. Another question is, the State Revolving Fund loan fund has been overextended. Last week, they were having difficulty funding many, many, many projects. Your application is very low on the totem pole at the State Revolving Fund. I wish we could talk more about some bonds. I know I've been asking about it for a long time, and so I'd like to see what all the funding sources are and what benefits there may be to that. And perhaps that's coming with Mr. Handler's comes in a couple weeks. With regard to this RFP and going out for air pollution and archaeology, the component that Kevin Merck and Associates has been sole-sourced for or handpicked for, I don't quite understand why you wouldn't have a fair process for all components of this work, including the Kevin Merck work. I mean, Mr. Merck is, I didn't mean to make that pun. Mr. Merck's work is good. We've seen it with the Cherry Avenue Bridge project, but he, like any other contractor, should have to compete. And so I would like to understand the rationale of why he was chosen to go on with biology, where everyone else has to propose for the other components. Thank you.
Anyone else? Moving back to discussion.
Does Mr. Nunley have any other comment to add to the discussion?
If you have.
Yes, please.
Thank you. I'm Mike Nunley with MKN and Associates. I worked with Mr. Sweet on the RFP. I would be glad to I didn't really have any comments, but I'd be glad to respond to any questions you or the public may have. I'll kind of look to Rick's direction for which questions he might like me to answer. Or...
I think that if I'm not sure what the board would like to have answered out of the questions that come forth. So if you have questions that you would like answered,
well,
Mike and I will work on answering them for you.
Probably the best question, I think, was have we looked into the bond market? And I think the answer to that is that we're having Mr. Handlers come at the next meeting to discuss the other financing possibilities for this project.
Correct.
And I'm presuming that the reason that this is before us tonight is that we're using a multifaceted approach to secure the most advantageous funding that we can. And the USDA at this point looks like certainly the only potential grant source for this project. And the USDA and the State Revolving Fund may be sources of low-interest loans. So is that all generally correct?
That's pretty correct. You've got that down. The State Revolving Fund is certainly available for potentially financing the entire project for which you don't get grants for under the USDA. The amount they would finance, of course, that could be adjustable. But the project is potentially could be financed using the State Revolving Fund, which is, I think, the rate is running about 1.7%. So the comparison numbers we ran were bond market numbers in the 4% range, which are, depending on your bond rating, in the range of possibilities in today's market, and compared to 2% rate, which is actually higher than the current SRF number, State Revolving Fund numbers. And given that number, you see a substantial change in total payments, which would result in a 4% to 2% comparison at $28,640,718, approximately, over a period of 30 years of financing. So is the State Revolving Fund a sure thing? No, it is certainly not. Is it worth the investment to see if we could have this significant savings? We certainly believe that it's at least worth this investment.
Okay. Thank you for that. I think that answers my questions. Thank you, Mr. Nunley. I'm basically prepared to support this tonight. I will make a parenthetical comment that throughout some of this report was prepared by the former administrator who characterized Oceana as a disadvantageous community. And I wish to go on record that I've never found Oceana to be at all disadvantageous. And I would hope that that could be corrected with proper terminology. But I'm willing to support this item, and I would move adoption of the staff recommendation.
And I will second that, and I would say that also these are not the correct figures, the correct new figures for Oceano. It has, we received a report approximately 2 months ago there was a re-audit of Oceano, and median family income is now $36,000 or $38,000. Not, we are going downhill. Life isn't getting any easier, I don't think. Anyway, have a motion on the table. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Carries 2-0. Thank you. Moving on to 6C, review of the brine program.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yeah.
Members of the audience, the item before you is our report on our brine program and the testing that we use. Some discussion has been brought forth about the haul route, which we are presently using, has been in place since February last year, which was largely in response to neighborhood concerns. But we have a pretty aggressive testing program. You can see from the volumes, the total volume of brine is about, last year was about 2.96 million, which is a little more than our average daily plant discharge of 2.5 million. So we discharge about 2.5 million gallons per day, and total brine last year was about not quite 3 million. So it's not a huge portion of our discharge. About 0.3% of our total discharge in that range. We certainly, we've received a letter from Mr. Snook, who's co-chair of the Surfrider Foundation. We have copies available for public review. Certainly are interested in Mr. Snook's input are certainly willing to consider his proposal, portions of the proposal. So with that, if there's anything else, we'll be glad to consider that. I think this is a receive and file, but you certainly are...
I would say I can remember for this turn to call for public comment.
Thank you, and good evening, and Happy New Year. I appreciate staff's quick turnaround on this issue. My original question was about an accounting irregularity. And then by the time the staff report came around, it became about the brine program. So I appreciate the foresight of staff kind of bundling those two things together. Apparently, because the fiscal year had already ended quite a long time ago, it was too late to fix some of the irregularities having to do with how the brine was reported financially. And so including the brine program, discharge program, allowed me to get my eyes on it and familiarize myself with it and ask some questions of whether these two permits that the district holds, one of them for brine discharge and the other for sewage discharge, have equal value. And after looking at it, I would say no. The brine discharge program does not have training and certifications that allow the paid members that we all pay for here in the district to have a part in how that is sampled and how it's brought onto the premises and how it is discharged to the outfall. I would characterize the district's impact on brine discharge as somewhat passive, and members of staff are not trained on how to isolate potential errors or misconduct or malfeasance in dumping illegal constituents through the brine discharge program. I think that while this is a receive and file item, there are some irregularities that I think I would like to familiarize with myself with, maybe meet with staff and see how Brian is brought into the facility, and then how it's sampled, whether the brine altogether is mixed before the samples are taken. Concerned about the chain of custody, as mentioned in the letter. Concerned about why the route to move brine to the facility was changed in May, and a revision was made to the brine discharge program. I don't think it went before the board. I think the district administrator at the time decided that it was something that would be good for Cambria when they start moving in their brine discharge trucks, because when I was at the meeting and a representative from Cambria was there last year, this is the first time I heard about a route like this going near the airport instead of the brine trucks using the old route, which is the route I think that everybody takes to get to the plant through the main gate. Lots to talk about. I think the district and the board should take seriously the materials that pass through the outfall pipe that impact our ocean water quality. Certainly shouldn't hand over the initiative to people that don't work for the plant to keep the discharge clean. They aren't trained, they aren't certified. We have trained, certified technicians that could do that. If there's a system that can mix the brine to include how it's sampled before it's discharged, we need to do that. We need to look out for the ocean environment as best we can, as thoughtful and caring custodians of the coastal environment. So thank you, and I look forward to working with staff in the future to improve or eventually phase out as necessary the brine discharge program. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Yeah.
Julie Tacker again, and I haven't been able to find what your maximum daily limit of brine is. Somewhere in my memory, it's 50,000 gallons per day. If you were to have taken the Cambria discharge as what they were proposing, you would have displaced other customers at least some days of the week, because Cambria's load was going to be large. To my knowledge, they have not sent any trucks because their system is down. Displacing other customers, my community is one of those customers. And as we grapple with our water quality issues in Los Osos, we are using ion exchange units, and that produces a brine waste that we do bring to the South Sand District, and we pay to have that discharged through your outfall. As you look forward, when you recycle water, you're going to have a byproduct that is brine. That tech memo number 7 and the membrane bioreactor, big byproduct of brine. What your updated brine disposal plan, you're not talking very far into the future. It's simply how you plan to handle things right here, right now. But if you are going to recycle and you're going to get higher quality, you will be having to displace those other customers. So there's an impact. And kind of what Brad's talking about is that there's environmental impacts, whether it's more trucks from other facilities or your own environmental impacts, all of those need to be analyzed, and there's a process. What I objected to in the Huebner and the Gruber relationship for Cambria is that Huebner, just because it said so in the policy, had the authority to authorize a contract with that community, and that he wasn't even going to bring it to your board because the policy says he had that authority. Well, the board should be able to override that policy and should be able to say, hey, wait a minute, we don't want to be a party to that. We want to leave space in our permit for our own discharges or something, you know, dischargers that are closer or have less environmental impacts. But your board never got that conversation. When Brad talked about the new route, this particular stretch of the route from the end of the airport into the plant, that is a dirt road. It's surrounded on both sides by willow trees, which are a wetland indicator. This is a very, very sensitive, eco-sensitive area that did not have analysis or any mitigation put into place before this road became more traveled. So as part of your forethinking in the future, this needs to be either improved so that it can't be more, any damage to the plants and animals that live around it, or, you know, I don't know what the issues are entirely there, but your board needs to be able to look at that and have mitigation put in place so that the least damage is done by the use of this road. Thank you.
Anyone else coming forward? Go back to discussion then. Mr. Hill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I share the concern of the commenters for the quality of the discharge to the ocean. And I'm concerned that the sampling is fundamentally done by the supplier of the brine, if you will, rather than the district. What exactly is our sampling? Do we sample indeed every discharge load? I'm reminded that several years ago there was an incident where our discharge included a considerable amount of DDT, and some of the beach RV dump stations were blamed for that, but there was no real no proof that it had come from there, and no reason to think that people would have DDT in their recreational vehicle. So those kinds of things concern me, and I think should concern all of our residents, to make sure that we do fully adequate sampling of brine loads. Second issue would be, so first issue is sampling. Second issue would be the route that was revised to have the trucks come in the back of the plant. I suspect that was because anticipation of a large number of brine trucks, which are full of liquid and very heavy, going across the wooden bridge on the way into the plant, and as possibly as a way to avoid loading on that bridge. So while I don't know that that's the case, I think that might have something to do with it. So this is a review and file, I recognize that, but I would like to have an explanation about how our sampling has been characterized as robust. If we could get comments about how robust it actually is, and then also the impact of the trucks on the dirt road.
The haul route, while I suspect that exactly the same thing you said about the bridge loading and hauling across there, apparently that when I questioned earlier, on this today and before. That wasn't really what the reason was that I heard anyway, was to respond to neighborhood complaints from across the way. And I'm going to assume that's exactly what it was, and I can see how that would be. And I didn't hear it was an anticipation. I heard it was a question that come up about using that route for the brown trucks at that time. So that's why that was changed, is my understanding. As far as the sampling goes, it's my understanding that we do independent sampling at least once a year from each supplier, and that each load has a sample drawn from our lab technician. And she's, of course, a certified lab technician. So we can certainly have a discussion with Mr. Snook about what's going on here. I know that in some areas in the state, there has certainly been some concern about brine disposal. I think that we're a little different in that our volumes are considerably smaller than in many areas where they're doing a vast amount of desalination. But we certainly are willing to engage in a conversation about it. I think Ms. Tacker is correct, and someday this may all change. And during that time, there is going to be a significant discussion about discharge limits and how brine is disposed of, because it's not something that's just a given. So, and that conversation happens with MBR processes or desal processes as the processes move forward.
Okay, thank you for that. I would request, I guess, that staff at your availability, independent on your schedule, would meet with Mr. Snook and try to address his concerns, make sure he's aware of what our program entails and what our process is.
I would definitely support that. Yeah. Anything else? It's just an accept and file. And vaguely in the back of my mind, I believe the route was changed because of neighbors' complaints specifically.
Because mm-hmm. there are going to be a lot more trucks, supposedly, from Cambria.
Yeah. And I would guess that there is going to be no good route. You either come in by the creek or you go over the lagoon. So you got a threat no matter which way you bring the trucks, you've got the same threat of a spill. Or at least that would be my feeling. Anyway, moving on. Read it correctly. Notice of violation request to execute acceptance of conditional resolution and waiver for right to hearing.
Yes, Madam Chair, members of the board. We recently received a letter from the Regional Water Quality Control Board dated December 12th about violations that our plant had received. And they are offering us an acceptance and conditional resolution waiver of right to hearing for the cost of $3,000 per each of those violations. And what those violations consist of were primarily the three violations were two majors and five minors that occurred within a 180-day period. And so they're offering to resolve these issues for a total payment of $9,000 as long as we accept the conditional resolution and waive our right to a hearing. The alternative would be to direct the management not to execute the acceptance of resolution and to approach this as a standard violation and have it done administratively by the board. It's unlikely that we'd receive such a favorable monetary agreement. So that's our presentation. I'd be glad to address any issues that or respond to any questions you may have. And with that,
I would just have one question. I know, and then I'll just we're guilty of all these?
I believe so.
Yeah. Just, and go on to public comment.
Good evening again, Julie Tacker, and I would agree that you accept the Water Board's proposal. But I think you need to correct the record. I know you do. On the Water Board's website, there are the reports that show exactly what was in violation and how much, on what day, and a little homework. It's not quite how the staff report characterizes it. It says in the winter of 2015, there were 5 violations of the district's fecal coliform limit within a 180-day period. It was not the winter. It was from July to December. It was not all fecal. There were 2 fecal exceedances, one in July, one in December. There were 3 total dissolved solids exceedances. One of those was major. The other 2 were minor. The 2 fecal were both minor in that 180-day period. The total dissolved solids exceedances were all in July with that one fecal. It's important to note, Mr. Sweet was the administrator at the time, and I'm sure he remembers that there was a pipe, a force main pipe ruptured in the plant, and that's what triggered the majority of these exceedances. The fecal in December was a fluke and not related to the July matter. So I think that's important to get on the record that it's just been mischaracterized here. If you there's any question, the August 5th, 2015, Chief Plant Operator's report, written and verbally, you can go back to the tape, it spells it out exactly what happened during that time frame and that we were to expect this letter. So I just... a little homework would have painted a little more understandable picture, and it's all on the Water Board's website. I think even the Water Board's letter is a little misleading because of the table in Exhibit A. Item number 2, where they say it's fecal, is not all fecal. It's the total dissolved solids for the July. So just hoping that you can maybe correct that, and certainly don't spend a whole lot of time and money arguing with the Water Board. Just I think it's really at the district level that this needs to be corrected. Thank you.
Anyone else? Moving on.
Okay. I think it's valuable to make sure that the record is accurate, and I'm confident that it is on the Water Board's website. Hopefully the district admits that we did have this series of violations, 2 major and 5 minor within that 6-month, 180-day period. And I strongly support the staff's recommendation that we make the settlement as recommended by staff.
Is that in the form? That's a motion?
So I would move that we accept the staff recommendation.
Moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you. The The item before you, if we're ready to move on to 6F?
Yes, please.
6E. 6E,
sorry.
6E.
Yes. The item before you is call for bids on the biosolids handling facility project. The biosolids handling facility project is actually a 20 by 20 concrete pad with curbs that sits on the east side of the building, which houses our centrifuge. What happens now is our centrifuge takes its relatively dried sludge. By relatively dried sludge, it means about 3% by moisture, so it's not dry by any means, but relatively dried sludge, and uses a conveyor, which was acquired as a secondhand conveyor about 4 or 5 years ago from an aggregate operation, and it moves them to sludge drying beds that sit on the west side of that building. What we're looking, because the conveyor belt has far exceeded its life expectancy at this point, and replacement of the conveyor belt would be costly, we are looking to dispose of our sludge on the side that the centrifuge naturally disposes it of, which would be the east side of the building. And so we're looking to construct a 20 by 20 reinforced concrete pad with a drainage system and curbing for containment. So that sludge can be disposed of in the, what we believe is the most economical way possible. The project probably is below the $35,000 threshold, but because we're close to that, we've asked for the board's approval of call for bids, and that's the staff recommendation. If I can answer any questions, I'm certainly available to do that.
I guess probably my only question is, does this fall within the purview of the Coastal Commission to give us a permit for it?
There is a Coastal Commission permit on this project.
Okay, thank you. That's all, Madam Chair.
The only question I would have is, you would still use the old drying bed or not at all?
The drying beds are used
for storage.
The purpose was, is the centrifuge is supposed to be used only during wet seasons, so when your drying beds are not functioning very well because the natural heat you get, although this winter is not a very good example, that usually you'd get during the summer months would not be available, and so drying through a mechanical mechanism would be required. And that's we don't have enough beds just to allow for a long time storage, so
okay.
It made more sense to supplement our drying facilities with a mechanical device, which is the centrifuge.
Thank you. Public comment on this?
I just have a question. When you put the waste out onto the pad, is that what, I mean, you just put it on there and let it drain? Is that the idea?
I'm sorry too.
Is that the idea to let it drain? And if it is it covered against the weather if it rains? I don't really understand how it works.
Could you please explain it?
Sure. To the best of my ability anyway. The once material is processed by the centrifuge, it would be available for delivery to a biosolids disposal facility. So it would naturally drain, so therefore we'd have a drainage facility that takes the fluids back to the headworks of our plant, but it's anticipated that it's only held during a period of time until we accumulate enough to validate a haul on that. So it's not held for very long after it leaves the centrifuge.
Thank you. Entertain a motion.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would move that we adopt the staff recommendation, and I appreciate the staff bringing this item to the board, even though it's technically within the spending purview of the administrators. I'm very appreciative that the staff has brought this forward in the interest of transparency and public information.
I'll second the motion. Moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Carries 2-0. Whipping along here. Moving on to technical consultants and plant operations reports.
Item 6F is the technical consultants and plant operations report. The work continues on the redundancy project, and staff is presently evaluating recommendations on sludge thickening process. Hopefully we won't ask too much about that because it's not a pretty thing. And the financing, you've seen an item on the RFP this evening for financing on to support financing objectives with the plan. There is much discussion still continuing on regional collaboration on the RGSP, the Regional Groundwater Sustainability Project, and we've met with various committees during that time to talk about governance and costs and how that would be split up and proposals. There's certainly nothing concrete, so to speak, in that as of yet. We are extremely frustrated by our inability to bring an audit to the board. We had hoped to bring it last month, and we, believe me, we are extremely frustrated that it is not before you, haven't been before you already. We're continuing to work with the accounting firm to try to move that forward. At this point, they tell us that it's February before we'll see that report. Also, there was a report on the review of the buy and disposal program before the board tonight, and that is obviously occurred. As you'll notice through the plant operations report from the superintendent, you'll see our effluent BODs and our effluent TSS are extremely good at this point. There's a couple things that play into that. First of all, what happens in the tourist times in our communities, we see a influent that is higher in our BOD input and our TSS. And during the winter months, we see those numbers drop. And you can see they're looking extremely good. Our limits are 40-40, and you can see BODs at 23.5, and TSS is at 25.1. So those are excellent numbers at this point. I don't want you to think that next July you're going to see numbers that good, because they typically go up in the summer months. But if there's any questions, we'll be certainly glad to entertain them and do our best to answer.
Questions. It looks like the primary digester review was good, recommending the mixing valves be replaced and just recoding, which sounds to me like standard maintenance.
The recoding we're looking at the recoding because it's substantially bigger issue than I felt the same way you did. It's turned out to be a substantially bigger issue monetarily than we had anticipated. We're looking at how to address that issue presently, and we will hopefully be bringing that item back to you next time to discuss the cost consequences associated with that project.
Second question would be related to the chlorine usage. We had one day of 281 pounds. That sounds...
Yeah, it isn't an issue of usage as much as it's the way we measure the usage. What happens is there is a container that is filled. Here's my understanding of it, anyway, because I've asked exactly that question. How come it looks like our usage is seems to fluctuate greatly. And it has to do with when the container is filled with chlorine and how subsequently it's measured afterwards. So I thought we had the reporting of the issue solved, but to be more accurate, and apparently it's more of a reporting issue than an actual usage issue.
Okay. Can we look into that?
So certainly. That
the,
we will.
So that the actual chlorine that's being used daily reflects on the number, that would be more helpful. I would appreciate that.
Certainly.
And I don't think anyone appreciates the frustration with our multiply delayed audit than myself. So I share your frustration. I'm about at the hand-wringing point. I don't know how to express it any more delicately, but thank you.
Public comment on this item?
I too am frustrated with, Chris Victorine, with the audit. My current concerns, though, is that we're going into tax season, and I'm hoping that's not going to cause a problem. And I'm not sure about the next audit. That really should have been done by December of last year, or 2017. And I'm not sure how that will affect getting financing if we're behind in two audits. So, just frustrated.
The $64,000 question. Actually, it's an $800,000 question. One of the speakers earlier said that that money had been that's been kind of like out there, and we're wondering where it's at, has been kind of found. I was wondering if that's what's happening with that.
Julie Tacker and I share the concern that Ms. Victorine about having late audits and trying to find financing. Your financing providers frown on audits that are not only untimely, they like them to be good. We don't know what they're going to say about your last set of books. So until we see it, I don't know what it looks like, and I don't know what to expect. I thank you, Mayor Hill, for your thoughtful comments on the performance of the plant. I have to underscore that much of the reason for that is for the good work that's just recently been done there. The grit removal system and the bar screen are exactly why we did those projects, is so that the plant would run well and your numbers would be good, and it seems to be working. Thank you, Mr. Clemens, for that. Something else that was raised earlier tonight was an $11,000 price tag put on a public records request. I would like your district administrator to clarify that. I don't think he could tonight, but maybe he can go back and look at the Liebert Cassidy Whitmore bills, in that I understood that there was one charge of $5,500 for 3,700 pages. I have to note that those pages were gone through by the most expensive partner in the firm at $350 an hour. We're all in the wrong business, for sure, but that is unusual to have the most expensive person do such a task, especially when the 3,700 pages only yielded 50 pages that ended up in the actual investigation. The rest of it was discarded. Most of it was redundant, recycled Oceano items from the billing. My position on that is that I was the first person to ask for it. Was not likely the only person to ask for it. You would... the job got done one time.
Can you stay on
topic? Yes, and that's my request, is that your board asked Mr. Sweet to investigate the actual cost of that public records request as part of his duties as administrator. That's where my topic is. That's what I'm asking. And the point being that I was the first person to ask for it, and I shared it widely with the public and the press because I wanted them to know that much of that material came from representatives of Oceano and the sanitation district administrator himself. So much of the cost associated with that investigation was going through material that was absolutely irrelevant in every way, shape, and form. So, and the best thing that I see on the operation and maintenance projects is a replaced fan in the men's bathroom. That is very important.
Okay, mine's real quick. On the plant operations report, sixth line down, it says December 2017 average. I think it should be December 2016 average.
Anyone else come forward? I would like to ask a question that was brought up on the audit following the audit we're doing now. I'm assuming that we are moving forward to get that done in a little more timely manner. Is it possible to do two at once?
Yes. The issue becomes... because of accounting standards, the person performing the audit now must complete this audit if they're going to perform the next audit. They cannot, the same person, this is my understanding, and I know little about accounting principles, but that before they can move on to preparing the next audit, they have to complete this audit. Otherwise, it would take a completely new accountant to start your next audit, and they would have to relearn everything that's going on in our district. So that we have told them we want them to start in the next audit directly following completion of this audit. And that's in an effort to try to get it done the most economically and quick way possible. Yeah. I cannot express enough our frustration with trying to get this completed.
If I could just briefly respond to one of the commenters about the charge for public records requests. I did find it very unusual that the senior counsel went through all of that, and in my own opinion, I think that's shameless bill padding, given especially that that senior counsel from that firm did not write the final report of investigation that was produced by that firm. But that is, as they say, water under the bridge.
Yeah, I was going to say that I would hope that we could move forward, and we've spent so much money now, I think we could maybe stop spending money on Liebert Cassidy and move forward to 2018. Yes, thank you.
I think the remaining item on the public portion of the agenda is written
communications. Board members' comments. Yes.
We did receive the board received a letter from Ms. Tacker, and there's a copy available. for the public if they so desire. There is a closed session tonight. Board member communications, sorry.
Mr. Hill has something to say.
I would ask for an agenda item on a future meeting to consider expanding the board to 5 members. It's certainly the Brown Act did not envision that the 3 board members could hold no discussion whatever with anyone else on the board when this was created. And city councils, as was brought up, each of the cities in the OCSD are together encompass a smaller citizenry than this board, but this board has only 3 members, and finding a way to expand that to 5 members, I think, would be go a long way towards solving some of the problems that we've had over the last couple of years.
So I'm sorry.
I was going to say, I before we launch into that study, I would like to know, because it's my understanding that it's legally mandated. This board has been legally mandated. And if we have to go work on changing legislation, Liebert Cassidy won't be the only huge bill we have to face. I don't know. Maybe we can just pass it on to our legislator. But it's my understanding that that would be a very, rather difficult thing.
My understanding, having discussed it with our former district legislator, specifically Kacho Ashajian, is that that would be a rather simple process, provided that the board voted to request the legislature's action.
Certainly, I cannot assess what the legislature might do.
No, I know that.
nor would I presume to, but I'm merely asking that we agendize for a future meeting that we consider increasing the board to 5 members. We've already commented about the audit. I am concerned with the number of meetings that have been canceled. But while we have, you know, important items before us, meetings that have been canceled or not held. And I don't expect the administrator to answer that. I suppose I'm just expressing my frustration with it.
Well, in Oceana's defense, you don't usually have to face the sudden death of a spouse.
No, I'm my sympathies certainly go to Director Austin and with her recent loss, and I certainly understand that, but this meeting has gone on. You're here, and Oceano appears to be well represented with your presence. So I think the issue was with the chairman probably unilaterally canceling meetings rather than didn't reflect on Ms. Austin.
The December 20th meeting, I couldn't get there either. It was, I'm sorry. Life got very complicated, my end.
Are we ready to move on to?
Yes, please. Let's move on to closed session. If our legal counsel would make the announcements, the appropriate announcements, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The board will recess into closed session to discuss 2 items. The first is public employee appointment. The titles are district administrator and interim district administrator. The second is conference with legal counsel, anticipated litigation. Thank you.
Thank you. Public comment? Oh, I remembered.
I have a question about the appointment of a district administrator. At the last meeting, the resumes were going to be read, gone through on January 19th, and then there was going to be an appointment around March 5th. And at this meeting, now we're having a closed session without any discussion or public knowledge of an appointment, and particularly when the board last time specifically asked how the public could be involved. So I guess I'm not even sure what the process was or what happened, and if this is actually appointment of a district administrator or an interim. I just question that.
Thank you.
Well, once again, I want to know, did you find the $800,000 that's supposedly out there in space?
Hi, Colin Kubel. I just want to bring up a subject I brought up earlier. I don't believe the board should be choosing their own chair when there's only a three-panel board. And it becomes a situation where you have two against one. And that is not a fair representation of what the people in the district need. I believe it should be agendized, and I think it should be spoken about to have it a strict rotation from each city so that there's no voting that gets in the way with two cities getting together against another one. It doesn't matter which city. I'm just saying, with a three-panel board, that's what's going to happen. It needs to be a strict, just standard rotation, and it really needs to be agendized to be talked about. Thank you.
Julie Tacker, and I'm sure Mr. Arnoldson and Ms. Kubel both meant for the new administrator to take both those questions up for you. That's how it relates to your closed session. My question, because you are allowed to go into closed session and talk about a public employee appointment of a district administrator, an interim administrator, you can sole source that guy. You didn't have to even go through the whole process that you just went through to put out a flyer and all of that. It's legally okay for you to pick whoever you want. We don't have to like it. But in light of recent things that have gone on in this district, I think transparency is the most importance. And you don't want to do anything that looks bad. So do what you can. I know you need to go in to talk about the appointment. And whatever it's going to be, and somebody has to bridge between Mr. Sweet and Mr. Karp, whose contract runs out very soon, to the new administrator, which may not be hired until March or sometime even after that. The other question I have relates to your conference with legal counsel for anticipated litigation. This item was on your agenda last month, and it was called a placeholder. But now it's real. So again, for transparency, was that really a placeholder, or did you just not have all the paperwork you needed to proceed on the discussion tonight? I'm sure you'll have it, and I'm sure the report out will be no reportable action, because that's what we always hear. But it does ring curious for sure. Thank you.
Anyone else?
Jim, should we go to?
Move to closed session.